In this episode of Zen Founder, Sherry and I talk about the power of one-on-one parenting. This is Zen Founder episode. What episode number is this?
I don't know. I didn't know there was going to be math on this test.
I'm going to the podcast. All right. This is Zen Founder episode 160.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. Welcome to Zen Founder, the podcast that helps people who are crazy enough to start companies be awesome at starting those companies, not break up in the launch, and not become really depressed and ruin all their relationships. I'm Rob.
That's the lamest intro ever.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we made. What is the word this week, Sherry? That was the best. I think we should implement that.
This is my podcast. I am not Mike Tabor. Although I like Mike Tabor, but this, what are you doing? Where are you? Do you even know?
Completely co-opted. I've merged the two podcasts. Oh, that was good. I had fun doing that.
You haven't, because you're about to
get kicked off. I wish I had stumbled less during the intro, but that was some good stuff.
Yeah.
Good radio.
Thanks. That was clever. It was clever.
Thanks for joining me on that. Didn't leave me hanging at all.
Oh,
it's like I put up the fist bump and you just sat there and stared at me and didn't do anything when I'm like, I'm Rob. And it was just silence, crickets.
I feel like it's sort of funnier if you're left hanging in that setting.
Yeah, it's true. It is. So we have 62 worldwide 5-star reviews in iTunes. A couple of recent iTunes reviews include this one that says, "Mixing Being a Founder with Real Life" by Josh Bai. He says, "Sharon, Rob, do a great job talking about founders and how it affects your life and family. Unfortunately, being a founder is not always roses. Their mix of experience and professional lives allows them to provide amazing content to help keep founders heading in the right direction." And for Matt Pritchett, title is "An Honest and Helpful Look at Marriage, Life, and Family in the Startup World." I'm so thankful to Rob and Sherry for simply being honest about their lives and their struggles on this podcast. Rob's background as a starter has been super helpful for me, and Sherry's knowledge of psychology have been huge in my own life and family in terms of learning and growth. So thank you, Matt and Josh, for your 5-star review. If you're a listener, if you feel like we've given you some value over the past 2-3 years that we've been doing this podcast, please log into iTunes or Stitcher or Downcast and hit that 5-star button. Even if you don't write a full review like Josh and Matt did, we really appreciate it. It helps us stay motivated to push the podcast out. It helps us rank higher, grow our listenership, which, you know, helps us keep it going every week.
Is anybody listening?
Apparently, at least 2 people are, Matt and Josh.
Thanks, Matt and Josh. And you never know, we just might read your feedback on the air.
That's right.
So today we are talking about the power of one-on-one parenting. Those of you who have been frequent or long-term listeners of the show know that last fall, so several months ago, we added another family member, bringing our total up to 3 children, 2 parents. And one of the things that we have done intentionally, really over the course of our lives as parents, but we are doing even more so now, is carving out one-on-one time with each of us individually, with each of our kids individually. That didn't make the most possible sense, but one-on-one, you get it. You can do math.
Yeah. And there's just been a lot of value. I mean, we already knew this because you and I used to, when we had 2, we had what, a 6 and a 10 or a 7 and 11, depending on the year. And we would go out on individual dates and just take, one of us would stay home with 1 kid and the other one would take them out to a pizza place or vice versa, or we'd even go out to 2 separate places. And it might sound odd, but it was like these amazing conversations would spring out of that because you have so much space and no one else, it's not like people aren't chattering for each other's attention and there's no interruptions. And you can just sit there and have an extended conversation and go deep on whatever topic it is. You can talk about some stuff that you're trying to explain to the kid, or you can just start asking questions and see where the conversation leads and then just follow that thread. It's super fun.
Yeah, it definitely mixes up the patterns of interaction that exist, you know, within a family. But you just did this. You just spent a weekend, a long weekend at GaryCon, which I'm still not like 100% sure what that is, with our oldest son. So how was that for you in terms of that extended time with him?
Yeah, I mean, we took off Thursday night and then got back Sunday. So we really had 3 days of hanging out together, playing games. GaryCon is it's like a fantasy RPG, a fantasy role-playing game conference named after Gary Gygax, who invented Dungeons and Dragons. But it's not just Dungeons and Dragons. There's a lot of card games and tabletop games, and there's the miniature war games, Napoleonic and all that stuff. So some stuff we do and some stuff we don't. But we had a 5-hour drive each way, which is just so much nice quiet airtime where he and I would listen to our own audiobooks for a while, then we'd turn them off and we'd talk for 15 minutes, and then we'd decide to stop and have a conversation over lunch and really dug into just topics that don't come up every day, things that he's thinking about, things that he's concerned about that there's not always space, I think, for him to bring up. When I'm away with one kid like that for that long, I realize how hectic our home life actually is, even though when we get home tonight, it'll be fine and we'll make dinner and do stuff. But there just isn't space for any one child to like really sit and go deep with one of us. And so I had a lot of fun over the weekend, and I've made another reservation already. It's in August, but it's Gen Con. It's a way bigger gaming convention, so there'll be less quiet time. But I want to do this, a couple times a year to take off with one of the kids. And frankly, you and I should be doing this more often here in town. We haven't done those one-on-one dates with a kid in a while.
Yeah, I think there are so many benefits. And just to outline a couple of them, I think that one-on-one time really allows us to support a kid's individual interests. So you and our oldest son went and did the gaming convention. That might not be a fit for our other kids, but it allows you to do a deep dive and really let that particular kid enjoy this thing that they're interested in and that they love, but they don't have to necessarily share airtime with the other kids or the other family members. And a couple of months ago, I took our youngest son to Los Angeles, and we spent hours and hours in the ocean because that is his deal. He is like, just like his mama, he's a surfer at heart. And for us to be able to do that without anybody else being there, being like, we're cold, we're bored, we're tired, we're hungry. We were just in our zone of playing in the water. So very different kids, very different activities. But in both cases, we were really able to just say, hey, we have time and energy and all my attention to do the thing that you're most interested in cultivating right now.
That's right. And I think that when you first start doing it, you go out for, let's say, a couple hours, and the first 10 minutes, it's just same old, and it feels rushed and hurried. But then it kind of unfolds. And I think things kind of become more clear and easier to talk about.
So a second benefit is that this kind of one-on-one interaction really allows space to support each kid's individual needs. Both of our kids, or all three of our kids, have things that they are really thinking about and need to talk about and worried about in some cases. And when we are away together for a weekend or even just an evening out, it feels like there's time for some of those deeper things to really unfold and come to the surface. So if a child is, honestly, one of our kids is really worried about global warming and the environmental impact, the fate of the world, which is heavy for a 7-year-old. So when we have this extended time, it's not just this sort of one-off like word of reassurance. We have time to really talk about and think about and return to the topic over the course of an extended period of time.
Yeah. And some of this stuff that I've talked about during these one-on-one experiences with our kids have been things that have not otherwise surfaced. And then I'm able to touch base later when it's not so common one-on-one, but it's in the back of my mind. All right, this child is thinking about this and I need to be aware of that and check in with them periodically about it. So it does have a lasting impact, not just in building the relationship and building those memories. Because, I mean, I got to be honest, I remember just a few times when I think back to my childhood, when I was five, let's say 4 or 5 years old, some of my memories were like my dad taking me to the office, his office, which is a electrical construction firm. And I just remember riding in his truck and I remember getting out and going in and the people saying hi. Like I have the memory there. It's some of my earliest memories, you know, are, like I said, between probably three and five. And part of it is because it was just hanging out with him, you know, and I just got to have his ear and it felt special, right? That I could just sit and talk with him and not, because I was youngest of four kids. And so it wasn't a frequent thing that I was able to probably voice my opinion at that age. So I feel like lifelong memories can be created during these times.
And the thing that I like about that story too is that it doesn't have to be this extravagant, like we're going away for a weekend together to this conference and staying in a hotel and doing all these things. Like it doesn't have to be high dollar, high planning, high energy kinds of things. It can be the power of taking a kid with you to the office or having a date where you get a hot dog and go to the car wash. I mean, things that are pretty mundane, but it's when you set aside time in your own attentional capacity to give that full emphasis or full attention to that one child that I think there's really sort of powerful interactions that can happen. So I think the dynamic that happens in all of our families is when the group is together, the group acts and functions like a group, right? We're talking about family dynamics or a system functions. And when we disrupt the system, like when we take individual members out of the system and put them together in different combinations, then their interactions are significantly different. So we listen differently when it's just one child as opposed to three. And we talk differently when it's just one child as opposed to three. And it might seem kind of obvious, but it's important to really carve out this time where you're disrupting the typical or stereotypical ways that you have of interacting in your family, because you can get stuck in these ruts of like you always ask a certain child the same kinds of questions, or you always do the same things with them, or you always interact with the kids as a group in very similar kind of crowd control kind of ways. So really when you take the time to disrupt those patterns and make different kinds of choices and different kinds of interactions, you're going a long way to really develop the unique relationship that you as an individual have with each of your children.
I think that's really important, because I know that I get in family mode and I'm kind of often it's like I'm making dinner and I'm having conversations and I'm talking to people and it's kind of just firing things off quickly and just being like, all right, go upstairs and play and then I'll call you down for dinner. And, you know, again, it doesn't feel that hurried when I'm in it, but when I think back to it, it's like, yeah, I definitely operate at certain times, just kind of trying to get through something, especially if we have something, it's like, you got to eat. And then we have to go to, you know, group cello lesson or something. It's like, it's really becomes pretty operational, you know, and much less individual. And that's where I think this kind of listening differently really is. It comes to the surface and the importance of having the ability to do this at least sometimes.
I'm always kind of scratching my head at how busy our lives feel, because I feel like compared to a lot of people, like we don't have a ton of activities and scheduled things and events. I mean, our kids aren't in Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, you know, like they're in sort of one thing each. But somehow it ends up feeling like it's a very operational life with kids this age.
Yeah, I think that's how it is. I mean, I think kids are busy and, you know, I shouldn't say kids are busy. I think you're right. We don't actually do that much.
It just takes a lot of work to feed them.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, when I've been home, you know, recently been traveling, I've realized I get up in the morning and they've tends to have had cereal, but if I want to give them something nutritious and protein, then I'm making eggs and then, you know, and then there's a snack and then there's lunch is already there. And I thought to myself, I mean, these are older kids, you know, there's 2 7s and an 11. So it's not like it's some baby you're feeding every couple hours, but it's like, no, they really do need something every so often. So I realize just how much thought and kind of effort is put towards just keeping everybody, including myself, fed during the day.
I think another thing that's become really important to me about this one-on-one time with the kids is that this is a sort of a busy season for me. It's a season of a lot of travel. Obviously, the book came out recently, and that's led to a lot of speaking and consulting opportunities, which are wonderful, and I'm super excited about it. But it means I'm gone a lot. So I have to optimize for the kind of depth and just optimize for like deep conversation and deep connection where I'm communicating to each of the kids, like, I am here for you. I'm connected to you. I am thinking about you. And sometimes you can't, if you can't have a lot of time, then you're really optimizing for the quality of the time that you have with your, the people in your family.
Yeah. I think this all comes back to, you know, thinking about the goal of parenting. And I think the goal of parenting shifts over time. You know, for the first, let's say 12 to 18, maybe 24 months, you're basically just trying to keep a little kid alive, you know, and keep them fed and keep them healthy. And then right around 18, 24 months, then you have to start developing this kind of this ability to discipline, and you have to start teaching them right and wrong. And you have to start putting up with them being crap heads and yelling no in your face and all that kind of stuff. And then, it, you know, as they get 3, 4, 5, then you're starting to really, you're teaching them all kinds of stuff. And you know, it goes even further in terms of right and wrong, as well as reading and, you know, other intellectual pursuits. But I think this, when I think long-term, like the ultimate long-term goal of parenting is to help shape humans that we'll want to have Christmas dinner with for the rest of our lives. People that we like. We're trying to make our people.
I love that. It's like so selfish and profound and honest. It's like you just want to contribute or help to support the development of, because we don't make them, right? They're their own people, but like we want to support the development of the kinds of people that we want to know and spend time with.
That's right. And genuinely, I believe that's for the greater good, because if we do that, the rest of the world benefits from them, because we want to be around smart, interesting people who are doing creative or interesting or ambitious things. I believe that's better for the whole world. And so like, if we can help them, encourage them, you know, into these places and to become, like I said, interesting, motivated, intelligent people, nice, kind people, I think that we benefit and certainly the world will as well.
It's like we want people who are flourishing. We want to help support people who are flourishing. And in order to do that, people need to be listened to. They need to have the space to talk. They need to have a sense of their own agency or decision-making. They need to be able to believe that their interests and way of seeing the world are valuable and a contribution that's welcome. So I think that, you know, obviously there's lots of things that you're trying to do in parenting. And I love your developmental model of like, keep them alive, teach them some stuff, and then help them be interesting. Just like the steps of parenting, according to Rob Walling.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of break it down, right? Stage one, stage two. It's always the 5 steps to raising an ideal child.
But all that to say, I hope that people who are listening are able to find ways to spend really intentional one-on-one time with your kids or the kids in your life, because there's certainly a need, I think, for children to be listened to and to know that they have time and access to the adults in their lives that are important. So this is a busy spring for us at Zen Founder, lots of travel and conference presentations and things like that. So if you are in Austin or Sioux Falls or Sacramento or Las Vegas or London or San Francisco, those are all cities that I will be traveling to or presenting at in the course of April and May. So if you're interested in seeing what we're talking about or what we're working on, then check out the Zen Founder website. You can see all of the events listed there. And we do have discount codes for a lot of those events. So if you think you might attend, send me an email, sherry@zenfounder.com, and I'll hook you up. Thanks for listening.
What are the names of the events? Because you said the cities, right?
Yeah, I said the cities. The Dynamite Circle in Austin, 1 Million Cups in Sioux Falls, Elevate Leaders in Sacramento, MicroConf in Las Vegas, of course, LTV Conf in London, and then the Association for Psychological Science in San Francisco.
Sounds cool. You are globetrotting for sure. Hope you're able to connect with some listeners while you're out there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.